Without these, I can not see out there, but I can read this.
Oh, I got that.
10 days with Mike cooped up. I wonder why Lee is not feeling good. I've always wanted to have the voice of an actor named Sam Elliott. He's got this deep, gruff voice. I didn't know it came with 8 pounds of congestion in order to get that. I gave this message in Nashville or Brentwood last week, right the day before the feast. And then during the feast, I thought, well, I can give this. And then our festival coordinator gave something very similar. So anyone that was there, this is going to touch on what Mr. LeBissonnaire talked about last week. But it's a little different. So it comes from a different angle than what he did. And I gave this story about 4 years ago, but it's a very fascinating story that's involved in this. There was a movie in 1979. It was a movie called Running. It starred Michael Douglas. You know him. He's a big actor now. At that time, he was an up-and-coming actor. But it involved it was kind of a feel-good Rocky-type story where he wanted to be a marathon runner for the Olympic team. And he was this promising young guy. But over the years, he had kind of self-inflicted issues that he was no longer a favorite to make the Olympic team. Now, 1980 was what they were shooting for at the time they filmed this. They didn't realize that the United States would boycott the Moscow Olympics anyway, but they assumed that this was going to be a build-up to the Olympics. But Michael Douglas in this movie would always start out and get ahead of everyone from the time he was younger. When he was younger, he would often win the races, but as he got older, if anyone passed him, he would just quit. And just if he didn't win, he had no interest in continuing the race. So he went for the Olympic trials, and he started, and he led, and he ended up being passed. So he then dropped just kind of quit. And his trainer came up and said, you know, just finish the race. Let's just see how it goes. So he talked him into it. So he kept running, and he ended up in fourth place, which meant he did not go to the Olympics. However, a couple of people, due to injuries and different issues, they were disqualified, and he was allowed to go to the Olympics. Well, it builds up a side story that he trains hard, but he really has no shot at winning the actual marathon in the Olympics. At the end of the movie, the marathon starts. He runs, and he doesn't start out in the lead. He just runs with the lead pack. About halfway through the race, 12 miles or so in, he starts taking off. He knows he feels good. Takes off, and he pulls out into the lead by about mile 17 or 18. He's in the lead, and it looks real promising that he's going to win. Well, it starts raining. He's running. They're all wet, soaked. It's getting towards the end of the race. And he turns around just to see on a straightaway if he could see anyone behind him. Well, he slips and falls into this ditch. Bangs himself up pretty good. Really bangs his shoulder out of joint and everything. And he's lying there. And he's crying. He's very upset. And he watches other runners go by him. And somewhere over a PA, they said there's one thing about the American runners, they don't quit. So the rest of the movie, he's lying there, and he's always quit for just about all of his life. So at the end of the movie, they're going to some kind of wrestling or weightlifting event. And they said, we want to go back live to an event that's developing right here. So this is something fascinating. At the end of the marathon, in the Olympics, they will make a circle around the actual track that they run the rest of the events on. Just kind of they get that last opportunity in front of a crowd to run. So it is 12 hours after the marathon had started. Everyone had gone home, but there's still people in the stands. And he comes hobbling in, and he makes that barely able to crawl. You've seen these people in the actual triathlons and things do this before. But he makes it to the end. And that's the end of the movie. It is a feel-good, although he didn't win. It is this, he never quit. Well, that's kind of where we are, isn't it? We just saw the end of our race. We saw what can be at the end of our race. But we do realize that this isn't a small little sprint. This is a marathon throughout our lives. If you could, I'd like you to turn to Hebrews 12, verse 1. Hebrews 12 and verse 1 says, "Therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us." Many people have sat here for 20, 30, 40, 50, even 60 years. Mr. Fritz, are you pushing 60 years? 60 years here? Say it time around. Many people have been here that long. This is truly an endurance race. It's not a sprint. We need to realize that. We've lost a lot of people that have died. You know, their race is over. They've got it made. But our race is still running. So today, I'd like... I'm not going through puberty. I'm just fighting this. I don't think. I hope not. But I'd like to look at 7 points today that will help us endure this race. And what are we seeking? We're seeking that prize we just saw last week. Point number one, this is not a sprint. This is not a sprint. During the Olympics, for me, other than volleyball, because I like volleyball, the most fun event to watch is typically the 100-meter run. It's the fastest guys on Earth, and you get to see really how fast a human being can run. Usain Bolt from Jamaica has, for the last 10 years, been the most dominant sprinter in the world. And looks like there's no end in sight for that. But can you imagine him taking off like that and having an endurance race, a marathon to run? He would not last a quarter mile at the most, and he would wipe out. It has to be an endurance race. We cannot go all out and then just burn ourselves out. Hebrews 10, verse 36, while we're here. Hebrews 10, verse 36. Says, "For you have need of endurance, so that after you have done the will of God, you may receive the promise." Think back to all the people that we have known, that we've attended church with throughout the years. See people sometimes and even forget, oh, we went to church with them at one time. You know, what happened? We were talking this morning, Mike and Clark and I, about there were feast sites at St. Pete where there were 12 to 15,000 people. Where are those people? Well, they dropped out of the race. One way or the other, they dropped out of the race. We don't see them anywhere, any of the churches of God, whichever ones that keep the holy days. But many people treated it like a sprint. They did not treat it like it was an endurance race. Growing up, I remember hearing from the time I was a little kid, you're never going to have children. You're never going to get married because the end time was coming. I know Tim grew up right here with me in the same services. We've heard this our entire lives. Well, now we're looking at grandkids coming. So it is truly an endurance race. Many people, no comments there. It's truly an endurance race. This race is going to continue. Not anytime soon is what we're seeing. Can you remember some people that's come in different times, all gung-ho, just excited about it, and just jumps into everything immediately? Everything. And within a year, they disappear. They came into it like a sprint. They did not realize, like Paul says, this is an endurance race. They disappeared after a while. So gung-ho, they did not have the endurance to truly stay in there. Point number two. A long race requires sustenance. This is the point that I get to take a shot at my wife, even though she'll get mad at me. But I do get to do this. A long race requires sustenance. Every endurance race, you must replace lost calories. The Ironman competitions are held all around the world. They consist of three events. Swimming, you swim 2.4 miles. Then you immediately get on a bike and you bike for 112 miles. As soon as you get off the bike, you run a 26.2 mile marathon. Ironman competitors, they expend about 8,000 to 10,000 calories during that race. So there's no way for your body, unless you replenish these calories, to continue this. You will see top athletes, if they don't eat, they will break down during these races. Most people need 1,500 calories a day. They're burning 8 to 10 in this 8-hour race. My wife ran a triathlon a few years ago, a sprint triathlon. If you know my wife, if it's salad, she's good with it. If it's anything else that's carbs or protein, not necessarily, she's not crazy about it. But before she did this race, which was a much smaller, it was, I don't know, 400-meter swim, 12-15-mile bike, and a small 5K run. But my wife does not eat just to eat. I'm not that way, but my wife only eats just to sustain herself. So when she's running something like this, she ran this race, and when she got off the bike, she was pretty well shot. She did try to drink this gel power stuff that she said made her throw up, so that didn't help at all. But people have to replenish all of the time during this. A long race requires sustenance. How do we get our sustenance? Well, we just came off 7 days of receiving it every day, 8 days. Every day we have the opportunity every week to come together, but we have to have it daily on our own. You know, it's great to be here, but we also have to do it on our own. Let's turn to John 6, verse 51. John 6, verse 51 says, I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread that I shall give is my flesh, which I shall give for the life of the world. Yes, now we do take it as Passover every year and everything else. But we need this food daily. We don't have this prayer and study. We pull away from God. We lose that power. We lose those calories if we stay away from God. We cannot sustain ourselves. It's too easy to say, okay, I give up. You're not treating it like an endurance race if that's the case. And Paul stressed that over and over again. This is a race of endurance. We must treat it like an endurance race. Matthew 4, verse 4, you don't have to turn there. But he answered and said, as written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. People that are running a triathlon, a marathon, they need physical food. Just like that, if we're going to treat this like a true endurance race, we have to have this spiritual food. We have to have it daily in order to stay our spiritual bodies capable of running this race. Point number three, we need to train for an endurance race. People that run marathons usually train for several months before they actually run one. And if you've never run one, they will train maybe 6 months at a time. But you have to train for a long, long run. Can you imagine training for a 10-kilometer race, which is 6.2 miles, and once you arrive, you realize that it's a marathon instead? We have to train for that longer distance. There used to be a race in Colorado that people would run. They would sign up for it, and they would not know where the finish line was. They knew it was beyond 10 miles, but it could be 10 miles, and it could be 150 miles. No one knew what it was. It was just a test of your mental ability of whether you could do it. They quit doing it because people would start cheating. They would have other people go out, find out where the end was, use connections. So they just said, okay, go cheat. We're not going to have it anymore. But can you imagine if you had trained for a 10-mile run and you realize it's now going to be a 100-mile run? No matter what it is, we have to be prepared for this endurance race. Like I said, we weren't supposed to have kids, anyone my age. Kingdom was here. I'm sure Eric heard this as well. The kingdom was going to be here. We weren't even going to be married. Well, that's not the case. This race is still here. This race is still here. 1 Corinthians 9. Verses 26 and 27. It's amazing how much Paul does compare this to a true endurance race, as you will. Verse 26, it says, "Therefore I run thus, not with uncertainty. Thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I preach to others, I myself should become disqualified." We all have to train ourselves. Clark doesn't love to talk about it. Clark was a professional boxer for years. You can't just walk in and fight someone. You had to train, didn't you? All of the time. You had to be in shape for that. It's the same way. I run thus, not with uncertainty. He's running knowing that he's going to achieve this prize. How did the marathon get its name? Does anyone know? I'm sure a few people have heard. And this is a legend. It's not necessarily true, but it's what most people considering it's what Nike actually has as their belief of the marathon itself. In 490 B.C., so this goes way back, the Athenian army defeated the invading Persian army in a battle in the plain of Marathon. Now, Marathon is located roughly 26 miles north of Athens. According to legend, the Athenians then wanted to let people know back that they had won. So they ordered this messenger named Pheidippides, I'll probably butcher in that, but to run ahead to Athens and announce the victory to the city. He raced back to the city in very intense summer heat. He arrived in the city courtyard. He exclaimed Nike, which explains why Nike uses the word now. It means victory. Or, in other words, it means rejoice, we conquer. And then he collapsed dead from exhaustion. May not be true. It's what most people say the name Marathon comes from, or the road. But he gave it all he had. He knew what his finish line was. He gave it, and then he collapsed. We have to give it all that we have. We don't know where our finish line is. That's the problem. That's the difference. Point number four. It's not a flat race. On a track, when you're running, it is completely flat. Yes, it's an oval that you run around, but it is flat. And we know throughout our lives, what we have is not a flat race. We have hills. Sometimes hills going down are just as difficult as hills going up. A track's much easier to run on. But it's not what we have. We have these hills. We have ups and downs. We just went through what is a wonderful peak here, but now we're coming back to areas where we have to go up and down. Matthew 7, verse 14. Matthew 7, verse 14 says, "Because narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it." Narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way. It's not a flat surface that's just easy to run. It's full of these hills, valleys. It's difficult, and we know how hard we have it. Now, even if we're doing everything right, does that mean we're going to have a flat surface to run on? Does it? We're still going to have these hills, these trials throughout our lives. Look at Job 1. I don't know anyone in here that would want to compare their spiritual fruits to Job. And yet, we'll see how Job was treated. Job 1, verse 7. And the Lord said to Satan, "From where do you come?" So Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro on the earth and from walking back and forth on it." Then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? And there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil." Verse 9, so Satan answered the Lord and said, Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge around him, around his household, and around all that he has on every side? You have blessed the works of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. Verse 11, but now stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face. Even Job, who he says is blameless, an upright man who fears God, because this is not God's earth, this is Satan's world, he was tested, and he was tested beyond what any of us can probably imagine, to lose everything, lose your entire family, lose your all your possessions, and for really nothing other than God was testing him, and Satan was allowed to do that. There's a family in the Living Church right now, McDonald family. They're a young family. And they had two little boys that were born with their heads fused together, across from each other. Their heads are together. Well, they separated them right before the feast. And, you know, did they do anything wrong? No, they're trying to follow God's laws. But they're being tested. Just like we may hopefully never face something like that. These two little boys were separated right before the feast, right, Debbie, I think? And I haven't heard much recently of you. I know the one, she's been able to hold one baby. The other one's still not out of the woods yet. This doctor's the best in the world that did this. It was on CNN covered, and very frightening. These people did nothing, but they're being tested. I'm sure they're questioning. You know, Job did. They're questioning, but it's one of these hills that they're having to run right now. And as we'll see later, we can help them run that race. Point number 5, stay focused on the prize. It's very easy if you start thinking about something else to get sidetracked. Stay focused. We just had 7-8 days of seeing what the end result of this way of life is. You see what the future can hold. Stay focused on that. We're going to go through humdrums here because the feast is over, like Tim said. And now we have to remember that's what the ultimate goal is. 1 Corinthians 9, verses 24 and 25. We just read 26 and 27, but I want to go back to verses 24 and 25. 1 Corinthians 9. Says, do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. In a physical race, that's true. Only one person can win. But in this race, as Paul continues to stress, endure to the end. Endure to the end. That no one take your crown away. How many people do we know that we can think of who've lost sight of that prize? Forgot all about it. Probably many of them didn't even realize the feast just happened. It's a distant memory for them. Perhaps they chose, I'm going to go seek wealth. I'm going to go seek whatever pleasures that they chose. Whatever the reason, they lost sight of this prize. 1987, I got to go to Big Sandy for SEP camp. And back then this was a very large camp compared to what we have today. Our camps are great, but those were massive camps. And you would have 3 sessions, I think, a summer. Well, the year I went in 1987 as campers, Melissa Kellers went, and then Sean Corleyou, who is a minister now, and then 2 other people that I'll talk about. We all attended that session. And I talked to Sean Corleyou, who he is a minister, but he is in charge of Camp Woodman now. And we were talking. We had about 225 campers there that year. And he's kept up with a few, and I kept up with some. And of all the churches, not United, different churches, we could only come up with six. Six people who decided to try to keep the laws that we believe God expects us to. Six out of 225. And if you camps now, they do accept people because we're trying to get everyone in who may have had lives that aren't always the best. Back then, it was very hard to get in. They would only accept those typically who had been involved in church for quite a while. So all of these usually knew the truth. Well, they lost sight of that prize. Because these kids, most of them had been in the church most of their lives, and they lost sight of that prize. Can people come back and finish the race? Absolutely. Anyone can come back and finish a race, but it's very hard when you drop out of a race to come back to it. It's so nice to sit down and say, I don't want to do this anymore. It's so much harder to get started again once you quit with that. Point number six. It's easier to run with others. It's easier to run with others. There are a few people around here that try to keep God's laws on their own without people because they've been burned by some corporate entity or something. But it's so much easier to keep it with other people. There's nothing lonelier than running by yourself. It's nice for a few miles, but then after a while, it's lonely just being by yourself all the time. It's nice to clear your thoughts for a while, but you need other people. Hebrews 10. Hebrews 10, verse 25. Not forsaking the assembly of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. Tim mentioned there are people that he can name that are very good at encouraging other people. Maybe we don't need it. Maybe we don't need encouraging, but there are certainly other people. This McDonald family, couldn't they use a heads up, hey, we're praying about you? Other people may need it. You may not, but that's not what it says. It says that everyone needs encouraging. There are people here that may just need a hug to pump them up. We all have those days where we're down and feeling bad. So it's easy to be together. I enjoy fishing. At one time, probably way too much. Should have been doing other things, but fishing instead. But there are two different types of line that most people use. There's something called a monofilament. It's a single-piece synthetic line that you use. There's also something called braided line. The braided line are many different smaller twines bound together. The difference in these two is a monofilament is a larger diameter for the same test. So one line is going to be, say, 6-pound test line. Well, the same diameter of a braided line will maybe be a 12-pound test. These woven together, like any rope that we see, it's much stronger when they're bound together like this. Single line, they're good, but when it's bound together, a smaller unit is stronger. Can do something different. I was looking at my phone during services, so if anyone caught me, this is the reason. There was a competition with mule pulling several years ago. And they had a competition. This one mule pulled 800 pounds. The one that finished second pulled 700 pounds. And they were talking, and they were wondering how much they could pull together. And they thought, well, it makes sense to pull 1,500 pounds. So they hooked them together, and what they found was these two mules together pulled 3,000 pounds, over twice as much as what they physically should have. physics say that's not possible, but then some of the people that have speculated on this say that when the mules are side by side, they're going to work with each other harder, just like people. I'm going to try harder for my family than if I just had to fend for myself. You're going to try harder with others. Now, they can't get inside, not psychiatrists put a mule on a couch and do that, but they speculated that's the reason that they did it, because animals also have that protective feeling where they do try hard. So the speculation was that these mules just were going to try harder with each other, whether it's a competition or whether they just felt the need to try harder. One more point. And this is probably the hardest one. Do not stop to rest. Do not stop to rest. And the only reason is that it's just too easy to quit once you start. Tell the story I told 4 years ago. Went to a sports banquet. And this guy got up. I think he was an FCA regional, leader. And he told this story. And he said, "You don't believe this, go look it up." So I had to go look this story up. And it's true. It says each year Australia has a 544-mile race. They've since, they don't have this anymore. They've done away with it. But it's an endurance race. People run from Sydney to Melbourne. It's considered to be one of the hardest ultra marathons in the world. It's a long, tough race that takes about a week. And world-class athletes, these trained endurance guys sponsored by places, Nike, Asics, different running corporations, they will back these athletes. They're usually 30, 35 years old. And they have sponsors, they have trailers that come with them, all of anything they need for these endurance races. Well, in 1983, these guys were lining up, ready for the race, and here comes this guy named Cliff Young. Now, no one paid any attention to him, and they thought he was there to watch the event, because he was 61, he showed up in overalls and old rubber muck boots. Okay. Cliff walked up to the table, the registration table, and he said, "I'd like to enter." And here there were about 150 world-class athletes who were going to enter this. At the time, they said, "Okay, this guy's crazy. Well, we're not going to do it." And they asked him about his trainer. He said, "Yes, my 81-year-old mother is here, so she's going to help him with this." Well, everybody thought it was a publicity stunt. They didn't pay much attention to him. But the press was curious, so they started talking to him. They asked him, they said, "Who are you and what are you going to do?" He said, "I'm Cliff Young. I'm from a large ranch where we run sheep outside of Melbourne." They said, "You're really going to run in this race?" "Yeah," Cliff said. "You got any backers?" "No." Then they said, "Then you can't run." Cliff said, "Yeah, I can." He said, "See, I grew up on a farm where we couldn't afford horses or four-wheel drives. And the whole time I was growing up until about 4 years ago when we made enough money to buy a four-wheeler, whenever the storms would roll in, I'd have to go out and round up the sheep. We had 2,000 head and we have 2,000 acres. Sometimes I would have to run those sheep for 2 or 3 days. It took a long time, but I catched them. I believe I can run this race. It's only 2 more days. 5 days. I've run sheep for 3. So they still thought he was nuts. Well, when the marathon started, all these other guys took off and left him behind. He's just kind of shuffling along. And they were making fun of him. Now, let me remind, he had to take his teeth out when the race started. He had dentures and they would rattle and bleed and everything. So he took his teeth out as well. All over Australia, the story caught, and people started watching, thinking, well, this poor old guy, he may die before the first night's over. Except there's one thing that they didn't know about Cliff Young. All of the professional athletes knew that it would take about 7 days to finish the race, and that you would need to run for 18 hours and then sleep for 6 to recover. The problem was Cliff Young didn't know that. These guys had it down to a science, and Cliff Young was not aware of that. So when everyone went to sleep, Cliff Young kept running. When they woke up the next morning, he had jogged all the way past the leaders at that time. Well, the next day they caught up with him. And again, they stopped 6 hours that night. Well, Cliff Young didn't stop. He kept running. He kept running until he was far ahead of everyone. When he got to a town called Albury, he was asked about his tactics for the rest of the race. He said he would run through to the finish. He had no intention of ever stopping. And he kept running. By the last night, he had passed all of the world-class athletes. By the last day, he was way in front of them. Not only did he run the Melbourne to Sydney race at age 61 without dying, he won first place, breaking the race record by 9 hours and becoming a national hero. He finished the race in 5 days, 15 hours and 4 minutes. Not knowing that he was supposed to sleep during the race, he said when running throughout the race, he imagined that he was chasing sheep and trying to outrun a storm. The funny thing about it, he didn't realize that the prize was $20,000. He didn't know there was a prize. And he said, I don't really have use for money. So there were only five other people that finished the race. And so he had it split between those five, which made him even a bigger national hero for that. Cliff Young ran the race without ever stopping. We have to learn to be a Cliff Young, whether you have to picture sheep throughout the night, whatever it takes. Keep your eye on that prize. Keep your eye on that prize. 1 Corinthians 9. Did I already do this? 24 through 27. I did do it. All right. We don't need it again. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 24 through 27 talks about running the race with endurance. We cannot run an endurance race without training. We need this physical nourishment. We need one another. Most people that run marathons will have a training partner that they train with. It's easier to do that. How many of us are second, third, fourth generation members of this church? Anybody? Anybody more than first generation? I mean, there are several here. Several. We have the opportunity. We've seen it for our entire lives. This is the way we're supposed to run. The way that God expects us to run this race. We'd like to conclude with one final verse, 2 Timothy 4. Second Timothy 4, verses 7 through 8. I don't think at the end of our lives there can be anything better than this that we could say about ourselves or that others could say about us. 2 Timothy 4, verses 7 and 8 said, I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day. And not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing. Again, there's not one winner of this race. Everyone who has fought this fight, who runs with endurance, they all, and we all, hopefully, will have the opportunity to do that. So if we do, just remember, we must continue to run this endurance race.